We have George Marie on the line with us. George, did you leave or did you stay?
I'm still here.
Okay, thank God. Thank God, because I feel like I don't even have a good way to introduce this conversation, except that so much of what you've been saying lately on social media and, you know, talking about separately and just all of the COVID rules and the thoughts about our, you know, your school age children and God, and don't even think about global politics or national politics, that we're all just hurting right now. And you've called it out as grief, that we're all feeling a terrible, terrible grief that we're suffering in. And you really identified it as that. And that's what we're here to talk about today.
Does that feel true to you?
Yes. Yeah.
Does it feel like grief to you?
It feels, you know, it's difficult sometimes for me, because I think about, you know, this year, you know, I've been through and going through a divorce, going through just, you know, monumental changes in the life that I thought I had versus, you know, even beyond the pandemic. So it's almost like the pandemic, yeah, the pandemic's bad, but the pandemic really was just sort of like, you know, it was like a foil. It was the activator, whatever you call it, the agent that makes everything freeze up. It was an activating agent more so than anything. And I think part of the reason I've been able to escape some of the direct grief of COVID, I feel like, is because I don't have school age children, for instance. So yeah. So, but that, this is just a long roundabout way of saying, yes, I'm totally grieving and going through what I've known, you know, are the stages of grief. I just don't think I had really put it in those terms until you said it. Maybe there's some reckoning with that as well, that they're thinking, oh yeah, something in my life, many things in my life are dead.
Yeah, it's weird, because I was having this, I would say, mental health collapse right around Christmas, and I'd probably been having it for a while. It is cyclical for me. I have had it times in my life before. It's rooted always in chronic stress, periods of my life where I have had huge upheavals, experiencing poverty. For example, being homeless. I was homeless as a teenager. I was in a relationship that was quite abusive, that had a kind of mental health crisis hanging over it as well, with my ex-partner. And so so I recognized at a certain point that I was experiencing a mental health crisis myself, and that my standard tactics and strategies that I have grown to know how to use, my coping mechanisms that I was using, were not working. And so then I started to kind of come out of it. I noticed that actually when I start talking about the state of my mental health, that's when I am coming back from the brink, I always feel like. It's like where I've recognized, oh, I'm standing on the edge of a precipice and I need help to get back. And so I made some Facebook posts, because once I started recognizing where I was and how close to the edge that I was, I started looking, going back on social media, and I noticed that it was very common. A lot of people were talking about it on Twitter. There were New York Times articles coming out. There were, I just feel like, I don't know, collectively perhaps, we've all started to really recognize that that maybe we're not going to be miraculously saved from this pandemic, that it's going to take a lot of work, and that we're all really stretched thin. I would say that it's really important when we talk about grief to just recognize a couple of things. And that is the first one, that there are resources for people who are facing mental health crises.
Yes.
And I just want to point one of them out while we're talking.
Yes.
For folks, and maybe if there's a way to like put this on the website or link it.
Put it on Facebook.
So suicidehotlines.com and then /Washington. That has the Washington Suicide and Crisis Hotlines, including a teen crisis line, 1-866-TEEN-LINK. And there's all kinds of resources there, and I feel like that's really important right now for anybody who feels like they are in crisis and they need some help. They need somebody to talk to make sure you put those numbers in your phone so you just have access to them all the time. And then I also want to just say one more thing, and that is that we are all, each one of us, very familiar with the idea of loss. Mm. And not one of us goes through our lives without experiencing loss, whether it's the loss of our childhood, the loss of a family member, the loss of a beloved pet, the loss of a friend, right? That may not even be people that die, but just fall away from our lives. Mm. And so we are all intimate with grief. We know grief. We all kind of know grief very well. We all deal with grief in different ways. And I think we should honor and respect that. And then also to recognize that we're experts on our own loss and our own grief. So it's not fair to make comparisons between losses. Those comparisons are, they're kind of made up. They're based in like a hierarchical way of thinking about things that isn't actually true to experience. So I just wanted to put that out there right away as we launch into conversations about grief.
Yes. No, and thank you. We want people to stay safe, and we want this to be a conversation that, if it brings something like that out of you, that you have the resources to seek help. And I mean, I feel like those resources should just be posted everywhere right now. And those reminders that you're as alone as you feel, there are people that are going through the same thing. There are people that are going through worse, and there are people that want to help and don't want you to feel alone in this. And you should not ever feel alone going through what we're all going through for different degrees. And that's sort of something that, you know, I'd thought about, you know, when you were talking about grief, and that this is, I mean, even if you're not responding to it in the same way that other people are, it is kind of a universal death of the way we knew life. It's something like we were talking about with Michelle. Like, can you imagine going back to standing shoulder to shoulder with people at a concert? Can you imagine something like that happening ever again? You know, you watch TV now and you feel like if it's from pre-COVID, everyone's too close to each other and they should be wearing masks. It makes us uncomfortable. And those are like little tiny things, right? Little things we think about in our brain. We're like, that's funny that I have that now. But that is actually like a cataclysmic shift in your perception of the world. I mean, that is like looking at an old, you know, in some ways dead and gone world that we may never actually get to experience in that sense again. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing either, but.
No, I think change is, you know, it's so interesting to me. I read this really wonderful quote in a book that I love, which I lent to my son. I wish I had it with me right now. Consolations of Philosophy by I think it's by Alain Botton. And I hate it when I can't remember who it is I'm talking about. But and it was written during Alain de Botton, and he wrote this book, Consolations of Philosophy. And in it, he remarks on this piece of writing that is from, you know, some period BC, which I don't know exactly when it is, where this author is just lamenting the collapse of society, right? Like lamenting that it's all over and all the values of Greece during this time have just, they're being washed away by all of these people coming in and ruining their culture and like environmental factors, you know. So it makes me laugh because, you know, how many thousands of years ago was that?
Right.
And yet, here we are, you know, we're still plugging along. Mm. So so this feeling like things are changing for the worse is not that unusual. Mm. And yet, I can't help but feel it. So I know, I recognize it. I'm like, okay, it's been here for a really long time. I can't help but feel it. And I can't help but sense that I am reckoning with loss all of the time, you know, and I am grieving a future that I had hoped we'd have that isn't here yet. It's not even here yet. As a dear friend of mine pointed out, they were like, we're all grieving for a future that hasn't even happened yet. Mm. Or for the loss of a future that we don't even know if we've really lost it. But I do think that we are grappling with the consequences of our actions, the responsibility that we bear, not only to the future and the people that are coming after us, but to the people that are behind us, you know, the people that we've buried and the stories that we tell, carrying them forward. The stories that our children will tell about us, carrying us forward. Mm. I'm a firm believer that, Paul, you and I are stories as much as we are our bodies. We are stories. We're rooted in story. Mm. And that story is one that we tell, but other people also tell stories about us.
Mm.
And those things get woven together and continue on after we're gone. Mm. And,
I love that.
And so I feel like there's a lot of responsibility in that. And that does sometimes...
To be a good story?
Help me, what's that?
A responsibility to be a good story?
Yeah. It roots me in that responsibility. Yeah. Mm. And it also roots me in grief, though, too. Of knowing that I don't have full control and I'm not very wise.
Mm.
You know, we're not very wise. People don't really, even really wise people, if they're really wise, then they recognize, I think, that they don't fully understand the consequences of their actions, that our actions unravel in unpredictable ways.
Mm.
We're affecting the world around us in unpredictable ways. Mm. And so, you know, there is a kind of having to let go of the control and an acceptance of that and a giving of oneself over, I think, to the community, you know, and to the people around you and the people who will tell your story.
Hmm.
Trust building, relationship building.
Hmm.
Those are hard things right now, too.
Yeah. Louisa just texted me, grief equals the loss of the person you thought you were in a relationship with as well when relationship trauma occurs. And I was thinking about that as well as, you know, I mean, that's, you know, grief you talk about, you know, in terms of understand. And then I think about that in context with what you just said. And it's like, yeah, we who we thought we were, who were revealed to be to ourselves. I mean, sometimes that loss of an identity where you thought things were one way, or you thought one reality was true and then another one is true, and you grieve the loss of the good parts maybe of the previous reality, or you grieve that you were so lost in it, you know. And maybe some ways that relates to the pandemic and how it's affected us, you know, like grieving the previous world, but understanding that maybe that world was always fragile and it was always vulnerable. I mean, that's obvious now, right? Is that like the way we were living life was completely vulnerable to something that actually historically has happened quite a lot.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel about it. I feel like we, you know, one of the things I miss the most, and I say this every time I go into a coffee shop now, because I'm just so like, especially better living through coffee, you know, every time I go down there, because you could sit right by the window and look out at the sea and the water, and the sun, if it was shining, would always be kind of glinting off of the undulating surface of the sea. And it's just so beautiful. And I miss it so much. I like have these like pain, you know, that I experience. And that's not, you know, that's not the biggest part of my grief right now. I mostly grieve because we are facing real challenges, homelessness, poverty. We have a generational crisis of children right now who are, have been for all intents and purposes really forgotten right now. Mothers who, I think there was like, what are they saying? Close to 150,000 jobs lost in the month of December, and all of them were women. So there's a lot of loss and grief and big things, but I also mourn the little things. Just being able to sit in a coffee shop with friends, have a cup of coffee, write, read, you know, even those little things, I feel like this keen sense of loss every time I have to confront them. But I feel like what helps me, and I want to be careful, because I don't want to just offer people these like superficial, like these superficial answers to our grief, like that there's some kind of super significant solace to be found in escaping grief. I would like to advocate for being able to reckon with grief in an honest way, without shame, talking to each other. But I will say that the thing that helps me with my grief is that reaching across the divide, talking to somebody, some random person, and just sharing that space, sharing that recognition, you know, when we recognize something in another person, like, oh, you're a human, you're bearing grief too. It may not be exactly the same as mine, but I see it, I recognize it in you, and I can be present with you in that. So even in a coffee shop, that happens all the time. And it's one of my like favorite things right now. I love being able to just bemoan the loss of coffee shops with people while we're in coffee shops, trying to just get our to-go coffee and then hustle out back into the world.
Right. You're standing in the skeleton, kind of.
Exactly. Yeah.
But there's still life in it. There's still life in it, and there's still, I mean, And we've had to create digital coffee shops and learn how to appreciate the outdoors more. You know, I mean, there's I try and think about what I miss the most, because you're talking about missing coffee shops the most. And the truth is I probably miss bars the most. but I miss that. And you know, a lot of my friends are bar owners, and you know, I've owned a bar, and that thought of, you know, the social, depending on the bar, of course, but the social connections that would happen, you know, with, you know, lubricated by alcohol, and of course many negative interactions have been avoided by bars being shut down, but there are also so many positive ones, you know, that, you know, just looking at the future of safety in terms of, if we want to not have this ever happen again, I mean, can you really just like go up to somebody you barely know at a bar and hug them and, you know, take a sip out of their beer? Not that I ever did that, you know, but like, that's that kind of, you know,
you did that.
Yeah. Okay. So what? you know, I mean, you're basically like, and then you're, you know, three beers in and you're spitting in each other's faces by talking at each other, and you're learning so much, you know. I met my best friend at a bar, and we talked about Dune, and we got really like hyped about it, in a way that, I mean, but I look at it now, it's like, well, post pandemic, I mean, How many friendships have been missed? You know, how many?
What about?
Yeah.
No, I was thinking, like, what about all the things too that we like kind of hated, like one night stands and speed dating? Like, those are things I don't really miss, but at the same time, I'm a little bit like, dang, they're just gonna come back. I hope so.
There's like COVID body wraps. It's sort of like the condoms in Naked Gun, the first movie, where they just put on those body condoms. And that always confused the heck out of me when I was a kid and I watched that movie. My parents rented that movie. I was like, what? Okay. God, I hadn't had that memory in a while.
Well, one of the things that I think that I would love to see happen is just this kind of, first, like, just an acknowledgement that we're moving through this, right? We are unfolding as new people in a new time. You and I have talked about this before. It's like the thesis of my existential dread, that we're not stable beings. You know, we are beings, which means that we are changing. I think it was Tolstoy who said, you never step in the same river twice. And part of that is because the river is changing, but that is also because you too are changing.
Yeah.
So we're changing. We're not stable identities. We're not the same people that we were a year ago. We're not the same people that we were probably even a week ago. We are multitudes upon multitudes of kind of fluctuating fluid identities. And the kind of the consequence of that is that we absolutely hate admitting that we're unstable in that way. we build societies and cultures that and linguistic systems even that are kind of amazingly steeped in the denial of that fluctuations. And you know, language though evolves, cultures evolve, we are evolving, we are kind of always bumping up against the boundary of that stability. And the world is a very chaotic and unstable place, as maybe January 6th might have shown some people, as this last year has shown people. So we will probably face something like this again, and probably not that far into the future, if climate scientists, the models that they're putting forth right now are anything close to what we can expect. I mean, what I think kind of shocks me the most is the way in which I have been a long proponent of trying to strip denial away from myself. And yet, when it comes to hope, so much of my hope is like steeped and rooted in denial. Mm. And one of those denials has not been climate science, but it has been the idea that climate science is something that we should worry about, and it is going to affect us. But I always believed that we would get there. Like we would, like human beings would figure it out and somehow use technology to save us all.
Yep.
And I laugh at it now because I think it's so, I mean, honestly, that George who believed that, it's kind of dear to me. I'm like, well, I understand. I understand why you believed that, because it's very scary to think that perhaps that's not the case. And perhaps it's actually coming much sooner than you expected. And maybe it's going to deeply affect your life. It already has. And it might cause severe consequences on your children's lives. It already has.
Mm.
And so there is, for me, there's a lot of grief there, right? But being able to be at a place where I can strip my denials away and say two things. A, the world is unfolding and it hasn't unfolded yet. It hasn't been written yet, as another friend pointed out. And number one, and number two, that the beauty of our existence is this knowledge that at the center of our existence is a kind of emptiness that propels us into existence, that propels us into the search. That, like, the root meaning of words, the inherent meaning of words, is that all words don't have any inherent meaning.
Mm.
The meaning is built through the entire structure of the word, through the cultural and historical context of the words, the way in which words are put together, right?
Yeah.
And so that is reflected in me as a human being, as a person of stories.
Mm.
And I guess I don't really know if I have anything left to say about that.
I'm feeling like at this point, I just lost in the thought of climate change and the fact that it's not over. And the feeling, like, for me, I mean, you are a philosophical correspondent here on Filter, but I get the feeling sometimes that, and the feeling that comforts me, I'm actually comforted being a fatalist. I'm comforted that there are patterns working themselves out that were set in motion by astral bodies colliding however long ago. And this was perfect because I couldn't sleep the other morning. And for some reason I was just like, when do we start measuring time in seconds? When did we start thinking about life, you know, with this, you know, iota? And then you dig yourself into these concepts and you realize how much everything in our reality is based on perceptions decided upon by a few people who have determined that life works in these ways, you know, and so many of our day-to-day habits are the ways we live come out of the control, whether de facto or intentional or whatever, of folks who we don't always see, or we at least can't influence and be a part of. And, you know, some of the change of the pandemic, you know, has really made me feel that. But then thinking about climate change, where I was naive George as well. I was naive Paul. I was like, big tech, they, you know, have the big money and they'll create the big, you know, carbon sucks that it's just going to be like the vacuum cleaner in Spaceballs. It's gonna completely suck up all the bad juju stuff, which I don't have a scientific term for, and I'm not gonna have to worry about it. And then there's that other fatalist part of my brain, and sometimes I think I've created this fatalism as a protection for me from personal responsibility. I acknowledge that's a possibility, but I also acknowledge that doing lots of mushrooms made me believe in it, and I have to trust that. Maybe I don't, but maybe that's I chose to. But either way, is that sense of, we're killing the planet, you know, we're hurting the planet. We must figure out a way to stop doing that. You know, we're spreading the virus. We must figure out a way to stop doing that. You know, we must address these things. And it would be great if we addressed these things ahead of time. It would be great if we dealt with these things before the fact. And this actually is really hearkening back to my conversation with Michelle, where she said, if we had been proactive on these things, they would not be as much of a challenge as they are. But government and people in power, I mean, they're not, the folks aren't generally proactive in those positions. They're reacting to current circumstances. And, you know, they're kind of hoping for the best at the end of the day.
But can I push back on that just a little bit?
Yeah, do it.
I know we don't have all the time in the world, but I just want to say that it's not – we put a lot of – oh, God, we put a lot on our leaders, quote-unquote, shoulders. But there are roots of that behavior in us, too. Mm. I mean, the idea – And I want to be careful here because I don't want to dismiss one thing that I've really hated about this crisis is how we've put one generational crisis ahead of another, right? And I feel like we are so reactive that we're not able to be proactive. I really see teens and youth and young families as being the next major crisis in this country. And I am afraid because I can see in some ways, I always feel like I can see the future as it's being written, right? And the things that we do right now, like forgetting to put the brake on, the emergency brake on, and then watching, unfortunately, you know, the families just heading off the cliff. And there's things that are happening right now. You know, kids are isolated. They're alone. They're working and school from home. Some of them are stuck in abusive homes. The predatory, this like sexual predation that's happening online is a huge problem. I hear almost all the time of all just self-harm, thinking of self-harm, suicidal ideation. All kinds of things happening with teenagers and young people. It wasn't that long ago in Port Townsend when we lost one of our young children, and a lot of kids didn't even have the resources to really have a grief counselors reach out to them in their homes after a child here committed suicide. So we have a big there's some big problems coming our way, and I want to just recognize that. We put so much emphasis on our leaders to fix our problems, but we also need to be willing to recognize that some of the root of that reaction comes from a just deep psychological place in each one of us. Mm. And I'm not saying that in a, like, we all bear the responsibility, which we do, but we hear that all the time. What I also want to just say is, like, be compassionate. Be compassionate with yourselves. Be compassionate with each other because we're not there yet. Like, none of us are there. None of us are enlightened beings. We're not walking this planet, having it all figured out. We're all winging it. We're all learning as we go, especially our leaders. Mm. They have great challenges ahead of us. We can all be compassionate with ourselves and with each other and recognize that we are all in places of grief and loss, and that those denials that we are rooted in, a lot of those denials are just kind of basic psychological processes that take a long time and a lot of critical thinking and a lot of work to work through, you know? So it's not to say that our leaders don't have a responsibility or that we don't have a responsibility, but just that I feel it too. I get really frustrated. I have been really angry about the fact that we shut so many things down without properly supporting families and young people. It's just like, you know, families and young people have been on their own for a really long time. We've undercut education. Nobody wants to pay taxes for education. That is not a Republican thing. That is not a Democratic thing. If you actually look at just people who say, yes, I want to pay more taxes for education, it's actually pretty much across the board. People don't like paying taxes.
Right.
And so, you know, we've been undercutting some of these foundations. People have had to build these foundations themselves, and then they had it completely all wiped away. I was one of those families, completely all wiped away. And had I been at a different time in my life facing homelessness with two young children in poverty, living on about $9,000 a year of income, which is insane, right? The only reason I was able to do that is because I had state support and loans from my school. That a lot of us, had I been in like that space, and like a lot of people are in that space, I can't even imagine. I mean, I can't imagine. That is a dark, dark place to be right now. People need help. And I also want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
Michelle brought up pull yourself up by your bootstraps, right? So that term was originated during the Great Depression. And what it was originally was that it was a term for people who believed in impossible, like you're an idiot, you don't really understand that you're, that's like pie in the sky thinking, you know, because the idea that one could pull oneself up by their own bootstraps was like, it's impossible. You can't do it. Right.
So it was
really like this kind of eye roll that came along with saying like, yeah. And you just pulled yourself up by your bootstraps, you know?
Yeah.
It has morphed into an ideology where people are being, they, in order to hold on to this very stable identity that they've built for themselves, they're like, yeah, I did it on my own. It's not true. That's just a part of our denial. That's just not true. And that saying originated to try to point out to people that that wasn't true.
Well, George, I feel like we could talk for another 2 hours, but we got to cut it. And we skipped your song, but I'm going to play it as we end our conversation here. So we've been talking to George Marie about, can we encapsulate it in grief? It's everything. There's probably a better phrase for it. Maybe not one word.
No, I think grief works. It's
okay.
Good enough.
It was grief, and the grief we're all feeling. And When the Lights Go Out by Crybaby is a song you chose for today. Is it topical?
I think it is. I think it is. And you know, the secret source of joy is sorrow, and being able to connect with our losses is a huge part of our humanity. And I would suggest we all dance to this song. It's the Grief Dance Party.
It's the Grief Dance Party on Filter on KPTZ 91.9 FM. We've been talking to George Marie. Thank you so much, George.
Thanks, Paul.
Let's do this again soon, and we'll just keep doing it until we're healed. Yeah, because that'll happen. It will. we'll work through it, and we'll just
we're gonna hold each other through this.
Yes, we are holding each other through this, George, and
that's the only way to get through, I think.
All of our listeners can feel hopefully held right now. And if you need somebody, if you need to talk to somebody, you can reach out to me. You can reach out to George. You can, what was the website again?
It's suicidehotlines.com. And then there's a / or a / and, Washington. And that has all of the Washington resources.
But don't be afraid to reach out. If you need a number, if
Lots
you just need to talk.
There.
And yeah, we'll have you on again soon, George.
Okay, thanks, Paul.